Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of this show, recognize they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets After Midnight Blog Talk Radio. We are part of allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, and you can follow along reading with us. So tonight with me, I have Babbler and Pam. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you tonight, Babbler? Hi, Pam.
I'm good. I'm actually in a really good mood today, so that's good. I
Woo-hoo.
Must work on time. Woo!
That's awesome.
It is. And hey,
Pam,
how's it going?
I'm doing great. You know, I figured it had been too long since I hung out with the both of you. So, you know, I'd have a little bit of caffeine, stay up, and we'd all have a good time together getting into the poetry.
Love it. It's good to hear from you. has been a while. I know I've been slacking calling the other shows, too. I've been going to bed earlier and earlier.
Well,
but
sometimes you just need that extra sleep.
Yeah. Although sometimes I'll go to bed early and then I'll sleep until about like 2-3 in the morning and then I'll wake up and then I'll be up all the night. So it's not always what I want, but you know, it happens.
Oh, I totally get that.
We kind of have a mishmash of three contests today because we have some carryovers from last week and we have two contests from Babbler. That were both awesome, but also only had a few each. So we're going to do everything. We'll start with the carryovers. So the carryovers are from my contest that had the quote, "All the buried seeds crack open in the dark the instant they surrender to a process they can't see." And we shall read the ones from that. Babbler, will you start us off, please?
Absolutely. All right, this is Seeds That We Sow by CRL17. Lovers plant seeds just to see if they'll grow. Straight line, kisses, row, row. Time reigns, flourish, feeding the soul, fertilizing each part. Given follow, feel the power of love, see yourself. End poem. I really liked this. Something really sweet about it. I really enjoyed the pacing, you know. Just lovers plant seeds just to see if they'll grow. I like that. There's something about the newness to a relationship, you know, where you're just kind of exploring. You know, and just to see how things go. And I think that mimics that really well, you know, and then love can grow. Maybe it doesn't, but this focuses on the good stuff, you know, and just how it can blossom if you give time and energy and tend to things. So I really like this, you know, just about like the maturation and growth of a relationship. I think it's a sweet brevity. What did you think of Faziana?
I agree. I think it is really sweet. I like the springtime rains will nourish the heart. So many people think of rain as a negative thing, but to think of it as nourishing in a metaphorical sense, as well as the literal sense, I think works really well here. And fertilizing each part to affect all of your soul with this love that you're letting grow. And I like that it's just to see if they'll grow because there is still that uncertainty. It's not like I plant it and it will grow. There's that questioning of it. We have eggs at my library right now under an incubator to get into chickens. And there's some debate about we're going to do this praying mantis thing too. And the people who sell it are like, well, there's no guarantee that you'll get them. And I'm like, there's no guarantees for anything. Like, I know it's not always going to hatch. It's not, like, not every egg becomes a chick, sadly. But not every love that you put out there becomes a relationship that totally changes your life. And there's that risk. But planting the seeds and just seeing where it goes. The straight lines of kisses, row after row, is really sweet. There's a gentleness to that line of kisses. You picture like kind of like going down your arm or up your leg, like kind of like there's like this gentleness to it that I just think is beautiful. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I think this is absolutely beautiful, and you're right, it does have a gentleness to it. I like how you talked about the incubator. It made me think of this YouTube channel that my daughter used to love to watch, this lady who raises snakes and other reptiles. And the same thing there, like not every egg, you know, becomes a snakeling, or I don't actually know what you call baby snakes, but snakeling sounds good. And, you know, I really like this all the way through, All three stanzas, they lead one right into the other very nicely. But I particularly like how the third stanza says, given some time, the plants will all grow, feel the power of love. You know, that idea that there are those seeds that we sow immediately, you know, that immediate attraction, but there's also those seeds that take longer to grow, and that's at that point when a relationship becomes stronger. So excellent write and very well done.
Excellent comment. This next poem is by Brundaban Panda, and it's called Seed Under Soil Field. Sacrifice of Seed Under Soil Field by Brundaban Panda. Specially prompt number 4 inspires mind more. Seed under soil field surrenders process dead sure. Seed be buried under soil before seedling process. Soon cracks under darkness when watering occurs. So under darkness the seed can't see what happens. Seed sacrifice naturally very nice as creator desires. Supreme seed, one in name of God, as origin, genus, seed species innumerable as trees, human, and animals. Seed of human within soil like womb, fields of mother. So much pain taken for 10 months to take birth after. Staying in darkness, a seedling kid touches earth, soil. So kid cries about world, bondage, sees smiling of all. Seed sacrifices for creation, sends separation to liberty. Supreme soul against merges, soul inside when time fit. Seed is almighty, father is air, water, mother is soil, sky. Said in Odia Bapa, Bayu Pani, Ma, Ti, Ash, Sky. I'm not sure about the last part because it's not in English. It says Bayu means air, Pani means water, Mati soil, and Akash is sky, and then God is seed. End poem.
Lovely read, Faziana. I really enjoyed all of the repeated S sounds and just the recalling back to the seed. It felt almost like a nod to being like, this is where it starts. It starts with the seed. It starts with the seed. And just kind of keeps pulling back there and yet still progresses through a story, you know, about, you know, a seed and kind of the different definitions of a seed. You know, it started definitely thinking about the kind of seed you plant typically. But then when I read the line seed species, innumerable as trees, human and animals, I start to think of like the start of a line, you know, like the original that all of the rest are going to evolve from, almost more like evolution and change, you know, the seed in that kind of form, which I thought was really fascinating. And then to talk more specifically about people, you know, and the growth of a child and the development of a child, I thought was really kind of a fascinating take on it, you know, to kind of draw those similarities between plants and people. I found the line particularly fascinating. So kid cries about world bondage, sees smiling of all, you know, hates being connected to the soil, doesn't want to be in the earth. I thought that was really fascinating. Just them, like as a struggle and wanting to be free, kind of wanting to grow up. It's kind of how I took it, but I thought that word choice was really interesting. So I don't know, I found this piece really, just a really fascinating take on the concept of the seed and sacrifice and kind of how, like, that maternal sacrifice I thought was really well done. I do think there is some religious context in here, especially with, like, capillation of Almighty, you know, and father is heir, which I think is a kind of a neat tie-in to call God also the seed, because if you're religious, then it's yet another definition, you know, where you think he is the beginning of everything, you know, the start of all.
It's like another definition kind of layered into here that kind of becomes more apparent at the end. But I really liked this piece. I thought it was fascinating. I liked the tie-in of different words. I'm not sure what language that is. It may be, maybe Urdu or Punjabi, but I really enjoyed it. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. There is a spirituality to this, right? It's beautifully written. I like that it reminds us that all life starts with a seed. And as you mentioned, there's that connection between humanity, animals, and plants. I really like the end stanza with the line, seed sacrifice for creation and separation to liberty. And seed of human within soil, like womb, fields of mother. Just a wonderful nod to the comfort of the womb, the strength of the womb, and beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, I like the tie-in to the womb and the concept of mother as well. Excellent observation, Pam. Fiziana, your thoughts?
I like that it got into the elements, like the air, the water, the soil, which it tends to be more of a I don't know if pagan is the right word, but usually not as associated with religion, with contemporary religions, but I really enjoy that connection with nature, and I think it works well with the seeds. So I found it interesting that it incorporated that with connecting God as air, mother as soil, but it doesn't say who is water. So I'm really curious who is water in this. I guess the father, maybe. No, father is air. Because seed is the almighty, father is air, then there's water, and then there's the mother is the soil. So I'm curious who is the water. But it just... It's interesting how the elements are incorporated in there. That's the part that I'd like to focus on and maybe think some more about is how the elements tie together to work with the rest of the poem.
I like that thought. I agree.
Our next poem is by Arlist, and Pam, if you could read that one.
Absolutely. All right. Let me just get back to the room and you go. And water slicing. My screen keeps bouncing around, so I'm clicking on the wrong image. Let me try that again. All right. Water slicing through stone by Arliss D. And it goes like this. Like a watch face in a Dali landscape, the force of love droops over the altar. No commitment to no intention can raise a lethargic lover above the hostile terrain. He has been thrown into the world as base. This is his battle. Then love carries no ammunition against its languid foes spread as far as the pudgy brown mountains, smudging the broken horizon. I have trod the warrior's trail, skirmishing within you with the sense of no sense, the vortex of absurdity and valor, no trope, strong enough to kiss the enemy. Goodbye, this is a delicate battle. Power comes from the Tao Wu Wei, wears down the opposition as water slices through stone, gradually, doggedly, caressing the weakest point with a basket of inactive save. For the flow against solidity, the river shapes a canyon gaping like an open wound. Who will reinforce the fighter as his faith breaks down? The map must be redrawn. Mountains must be laid low, rough places made plain. Victory and instinct habit the dance of indirection. Let us bow down to an intimidable force, a glancing blow to the will.
Pam, are you still there?
Or?
I hear you, Babbler. I have lost Pam. Oh,
yes.
And she has officially dropped now. We got disconnected. Okay, where did we leave off? Now I've lost
I think we
place.
Left
Do you know
off.
Where we are?
Yeah, we left off just after who will reinforce the fighter.
Okay. Can you continue from there?
Absolutely. Who will reinforce the fighter as his faith breaks down? The map must be redrawn. Mountains must be laid low, rough places made plain. Victory in instinct, habit, the dance of indirection. Let us bow down to its inimitable force, a glancing blow to what intimidates the will, but withers from the gaze of the inward fear. Who moves against only by moving for? His action unfurling like a mountain stream, gently overflowing its banks, spreading across the meadow towards the massive cairn that marks the way of the messenger, carrying his ink-stained victory treaty. Inertia winds the surrealist watch, setting the time for nowhere, for nothing rigid, and exact only the amorphous life force that moves forward its telos, the final goal of conquest, gained not from not conquering, slowly grinding down all obstacles in its path, approaching its apotheosis at the second hand, ticksly into minutes, into hours, into days, into nights, into eternity, still irresistible, still the triumphant trickle towards the towering foe. End poem. Well, this is a really interesting piece. To me, it's about persistence, like the strength of just persistence. Not so much even passion, not even so much desire, but just like stalwart rigidity, you know. I love the opening, like a watch face in a Dali landscape. The force of love droops over the altar. No commitment, no intention. You can just see, like, the flop, you know, the floppiness of it. Like, it gives it such weight. It's such a great tie-in to use the Dali landscape because you can just kind of see it, you know, his clocks. And how it's there's no effort in it. You know, he even then uses Dasein, which is like a German concept of just being, like just there-ness. You know, so that like love isn't about even effort or trying or passion. It just needs to be there. Like love just needs to exist, which I find such a fascinating concept. You know, if this is his battle, then love carries no ammunition against its languid foes, spread as far as the pudgy brown mountains smudging to the broken horizon. You know, it's not there to do battle, it's just there to be. And I love it. And as you kind of go through this poem that has so many wonderful tie-ins and descriptions and, like, calls to scenes and nature and warriors and so many different call-ins that make this really fantastically textured. You know, it talks about just how love wears down not through violence, you know, with a basket of inaction. Save for the flow against solidity, the river shapes the canyon gaping like an open wound. Just that wear down, just the slow wear down. I really like, you know, it's interesting. It's like a different way of conceptualizing like the tenderness of love, but not so much tender as it is just like stalwart, which I really enjoy. Just the unrelenting power, but not violently so. I really liked. I thought it was really well done, and a fascinating take. I thought it felt very powerful. What did you think of Faziana?
I liked it too. It has such amazing nature imagery. Like you said, the Dolly reference at the beginning kind of sets the tone and lets you imagine it, that droopiness of the clock, and it even uses the word droop in the second line. My favorite part was with a basket of inaction. There's just something about inaction being something tangible like that, a basket of inaction. It's almost like a choice of not acting. It's the... it doesn't have to act. By having this inaction, you have something even better. And the way that water slices through stone gradually is somehow more powerful than something that is really sharp and cutting through. To let it just be and gradually make such a huge difference in the world, to say that love does that, to say that any kind of force of good might do that, you know, like kindness that gradually wears away the darkness. I think that's a beautiful concept of just having it there gradually shapes things into something better potentially. I thought this was absolutely beautiful, and it used such intelligent vocabulary and images and just concepts, exact only the amorphous life force. It has such wonderful detail in here and well thought out. So I'm impressed. And I didn't know what the Dessein thing was. So thank you for explaining that, Babbler. I believe Pam is with us again.
I am. Sorry about that. My phone service just, bam, dropped.
But that's all right. I'm glad
you're
good. Back.
Welcome back.
And yeah, I thought this was just absolutely a beautiful write. It's intelligent. I like how you both commented on how the persistence and the gentleness and, you know, the idea that something gets done when we work at it, but not necessarily with a brute force. I do like the reference to the Dolly landscape, the almost kind of surreal gentleness of that. And who will reinforce the fighter as his faith breaks down? The map must be redrawn. I like that, those lines. And inertia wins the surrealist watch setting, winds the surrealist watch setting. The time for nowhere, for nothing rigid. I like the whole idea of realizing after battling so many fights in life that you now have that time to relax and refresh and renew yourself. So beautifully written and very well done.
I agree. What she said. Where are we off to now?
So that was the end of the leftovers from last week. Babbler, can you please explain your Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance contest?
Absolutely. So I put together a contest titled after a book that I read. I read it some years ago, but it just kind of always stuck with me. It's called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. It's a pretty interesting book that I would encourage anyone to check out that's interested in books. So I pulled some quotes from it because it's kind of about this guy who travels on his motorcycle across the United States. And he just kind of shares his outlook and his life philosophy. And I found some of the points of that life philosophy really interesting. So I kind of pulled some quotes out that had that kind of leaning. So the prompts, I don't know if you have these organized, Evasiana, if you would want me to read them or just go ahead and read them all now.
Usually I do, but not a lot of people actually wrote in their AN which quote they were writing to, so I didn't know how to sort them. So unfortunately, I did not sort them by quote today because I had trouble figuring out who was what.
No problem. I'll just read all the quotes. So, the first quote that I offered up was, "The place to improve the world is first in one's own heart and head and hands, and then work outward from there." And quote two was, "The truth knocks on the door and you say, 'Go away, I'm looking for the truth.' And so it goes away, puzzling." And the third quote, "You look at where you're going and where you are, and it never makes sense. But then you look back at where you've been and a pattern seems to emerge." The next quote, "We're in such a hurry most of the time, we never get much chance to talk. The result is a kind of endless day-to-day shallowness, monotony that leaves a person wondering years later where all the time went, and sorry that it's all gone." And then, "But to tear down a factory, or to revolt against the government, or to avoid repair of a motorcycle, because it is a system, is to attack effects rather than causes. And as long as the attack is upon effects only, no change is possible. The true system, the real system, is our present construction of systematic thought itself, rationality itself. And if a factory is torn down, but the rationality which produced it is left standing, then that rationality will simply produce another factory. If a revolution destroys a systematic government, but the systematic patterns of thought that produced that government are left intact, then those patterns will repeat themselves in the succeeding government. There's so much talk about the system, and so little understanding." And then the last quote, "It's the sides of the mountain which sustain life, not the top." But those were the quotes that were offered up.
Such good quotes. Like, I have not read that book, but now I want to. It's very intriguing. You pick wonderful
quotes.
It's
one of those love it or hate it books. Everyone I've met who's ever read it either loved it or hated it.
There's no in between.
No. Anyway.
So the first one we're going to read from that is by Daniel DeShino, and it's called Nightwalk. "Pillowed, blanketing shadows, scattered reflective light oasis, fading colors, hidden daylight, spectral distraction, purring plane heard not seen as a conversation with a fading siren, soft touch, massage of car wheels on injured, submissive street. Breath from within deep, beyond my lungs, inward as an antidote, outward to release. And all that was my day floats with each breath into the darkness." End poem.
Lovely read, Fabiana. I enjoyed this. I think it plays kind of on the concept of a motorcycle ride, but it's a walk, you know, just kind of that clarity of mind that you get from taking the time to actually go on the walk. You know, you soak up all the sights, the pillowed blanketing shadows, the scattered reflective light oasis, the fading colors, hidden daylight, spectral distraction, you know, just kind of take it all in, even like hearing things, hearing plane overhead, hearing a distant siren. And then just kind of using it almost as a meditation, you know, to just breathe in and out and just kind of reset. There's something nice about night walks that I think is really well captured in this piece. It takes the zen of the book and kind of puts it in here, encapsulated in an evening walk. I think it's really well done. So thank you, Daniel. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I really enjoyed this, and I have to agree with you. There was something very zen about this and that whole idea of enjoying that evening walk. I always appreciate Daniel DeShino's writing. This is a wonderful brevity all the way through, but I like how he uses the alliteration with the phrase "purring plane, heard not seen as a conversation with a fading siren. A soft touch massage of car wheels on injured submissive streets." The wonderful phrases there. I thought this was beautifully written and very well done.
Agreed. There's some really beautiful phrasing in here. I also enjoyed the purring plane. Well said, Pam. Feliciana, what did you think?
I liked that same line, especially that the plane and the fading siren were seemingly having a conversation with each other. It was like it was going back and forth between those two noises, and maybe the plane and the siren were interacting. It can seem like that sometimes where the sounds kind of blend together into something. I'm super sensitive to noise, so I don't love the sounds of motors or sirens, but that heightened awareness also makes me think about how the timing of things sometimes lines up really funny. So I can imagine it being a conversation to someone who has a wild imagination, as I suspect Daniel does. And I liked that the street is considered injured and submissive. That's quite the personification of a street. I've never thought of it. Injured I can see because of the potholes, but submissive, that's an interesting concept. And it also works for alliteration, submissive street. And it's the soft touch of the car wheels, which if it was a rough touch, the submissive thing would be a different kind of connotation, but I'm just really intrigued by the way that the street is personified there. So ponder that. Well done, Daniel.
Mm-hmm. I like that observation too, like that soft touch of the rubber. Like I can almost picture it in my mind, which is interesting because it's an interesting choice of words, and yet at least for me, visualization, it's very effective. Like, I can kind of just see it in my mind. So, anyway, I like that you brought up that.
It was an intriguing line. The next poem is by Peter Solway. And, Babbler, would you read this, please?
Absolutely. This is Kickstart a Poem. Peter Solway. Zen and the art of killing a wet afternoon, reduced to a parody, citing Dostoevsky, much ado about nihilism, Soviet plumbing, buckets from heaven flooding the Ukraine, news down the drain, Zen and the task of channel find, pouring on cats and dogs without homes, without humans humane, kind owners, meals on plates from tins, Zen in the art of catnapping, rover lapping, stress negotiating, roof collapse, yelling helicopter, pick a pet, laptop or rover to ferry aloft, dog alert, hound from wet lawn, with a roll of Sunday Times with supplement, crying forsaken, dropping soggy sausage, Zen and the art of abandonment. Whatever happened to Andrew, Prince of Charmings, doing push-ups with Rolf in prison, Her Majesty's looking on. Zen and the art of looking on, famous voyeurs and peeping toms, Cinderella's womb and ice epidemic tomb, selling bruised assets in pandemic bedrooms, without condom or mask, TV laughing, or condominiums with balconies and pot plants, surround sound high above Gold Coast surf, islands in the stream. That is what we are. No one in between, art of being crushed, ham in sandwich of licentious love, orgy fucked by stars above, Kenny's cock and Dolly's balloons, Zen in the art of wanking all the wet afternoon. Yeah, said it before, sing it again. Zen in the art of putting a record on, miming French impressionism, dancing with Dolly and Kenny, being reborn. Midwife from Shakespeare's Tim, Zen and art of interpretive dancing, showing the live lasses, dolphins and whales to watch. Parachutes open to land, detached from Mother Possum, art of natural observation, wondering all outcomes. Kenny and Dolly banging on, tut in the humid free room, whilst for poor pets of neglection, Love and Thief, Zen and the Art of Shivering, sounding like a jet plane leaving, Zen and the Art of Kickstart, leaving with her parents. Road trip to old girlfriends, take off from where we left off, Zen and the Art of correcting the past, musing on Putin and bombs. Hillary still fuming, cigar-sucking bitch. Lassie, come on home. Noah, do your coupling thing. Zen and the Art of accommodation, accepting diners' wait-in-line token, dessert surprisingly good, Dolly's blemage with Kenny's cream. Homeless, not so bad. Audience to recite latest weather report. Still fucking pouring. Cats and proverbial dogs. Oh, Noah with the blues. Kenny with erectile problems. Me with desperate themes, stations near grandma's. Art and Zen and idle fairy tales. Existential exhibitionism and sad tracks along my arm. Valleys of Snow White. Zen of keep on keeping on. Bird that flew, poet that knew, spied those islands in the stream, banged by dolphins, bacon in between. End the poem. Well, with any Peter Solway poem, I really feel like I need to read it several times to really get it all. But I did enjoy this piece. You know, I think it kind of talks about the kind of irony of Zen when tons of stuff is going on, you know, sitting in a recliner and flipping through channels while Ukraine is getting bombed, you know, having the luxury of sitting there just kind of flicking through the news and being able to calm yourself, you know, just be chill when the world seems to kind of be falling apart, you know, kind of calls on, you know, just the downpour and then the, like, pouring cats and dogs without homes, just creating, like, you know, overflow of pets and homeless people and just kind of eating heartless meals on plates from tins, you know, people screaming for help, and you're deciding whether or not to airlift your laptop or your dog. You know, looking at, you know, Prince Andrew, who was associated, you know, with the sex trafficking scandal with Epstein and all of that kind of knotted into here, you know, and just kind of the irony of being able to not care, you know, like the kind of almost disingenuity of being nihilistic when so much is happening. It's almost like being numb, really. And just kind of the disgust with it is kind of what I pull from it. Again, I could probably do a few more reads, but that's my initial take on this piece. As usual from Peter, I find it, you know, a biting, but I enjoy biting poetry. I like poetry with teeth. So, wonderful piece. What did you think, Faziana?
I think this is one of my favorites from him, and you summed up, you know, a lot of what I got from it as well. I really enjoyed the much ado about nihilism line, with nihilism relating to the nothingness and much ado about nothing. The Shakespeare, I thought that was really clever. Much ado about nihilism. Then, like you said, the idea of flipping through the channels and being able to have that privilege of skipping over what's happening in the world when other people are stuck in that situation. I liked the play on the raining cats and dogs, but pouring on cats and dogs without homes. So he takes kind of fun cliches, turns them around and slaps us with them. Like, how are you having fun with this when there's this going on? Biting, I think, is a good way to say it. But I think he's biting the right things. This is very poignant. The the part with Andrew, like you pointed out. He has such good references all the time. But I feel like this piece in particular is hitting a lot of key things that I guess they usually do, but I'm getting it more in this one than sometimes I do. I really liked the Noah's Ark part too. Where is it? It's like he's like, Noah, do your thing with the pears, because it feels like the end of the world. It's raining problems really intensely this year, and we're gonna need you to build that ark. I can't remember exactly what he said. I don't see that part. But there's something where he's like, hey, Noah, do your thing. And I get where he's coming from with that one. And then he mentions Noah again later on. The sad tracks along the arm, the drug reference. But it also seems like it's like that fairy tale kind of leave the trail. It made me think of Hansel and Gretel when they're leaving those breadcrumbs to find their way home, but that trail on the arm is not the way to find your way home. This is really intense and thought-provoking and a great connection to everything that's going on in the world and kind of slapping us for, like, being Zen in a time where or maybe we shouldn't be, but maybe we need it more than ever at the same time. This is really awesome. I think this is my favorite from Peter.
Yeah, excellent comments, Stacey. I agree. I feel like it could almost be retitled, like, Zen and the Art of Not Giving a Shit. But I think it's a great piece. What did you think, Pam?
I like that, the art of not giving a shit. I feel like oftentimes Peter's poetry is a who's who of fucked up horny people. And, you know, he's always got intriguing imagery and metaphor. And I like how he oftentimes brings artists in and pop culture. I really like Whatever Happened to Andrew, Prince of Charmings. And where it said parachutes open to land, detached from other possum, art of natural observation, wondering all outcomes. I like how it talks about that kind of jumping into it, but slowly and observing life. And there is definitely a real bite to this and a very kind of sardonic humor and look at life. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. It is pretty sardonic and biting, but I enjoy that about it. Excellent observations, Pam. Thank you. What's up next?
Our next one is by Stephen T. Wellman. Pam, could you read that for us, please?
I would be happy to. All right, Burn by Stephen T. Wellman. Burn, igniting the wick. I become flame, a luminous light, brilliantly bright, piercing darkness, filling the vastness. Allow my wax to drip, meticulously melt. Allow love to be felt until I am no more, merely nothing, to become something that can change anything. End poem.
Enjoy the shape piece and wonderful read, Pam. You know, just the shape, the candle, I really enjoyed. And then to kind of feel it out with the words, too, like the way that the word burn is put, so one letter per line, it kind of prompts you to read it so slowly, you know, burn, which gives kind of a sensuality to the tone of this piece as well. And then there's just kind of a slowness to the language, you know. Allow my wax to drip, to meticulously melt. Allow love to be felt. Like, it just kind of oozes. And in that way, it's kind of sensual, which I enjoyed. And then it kind of talks about, you know, the fading away to be rebuilt as something, to become something new, to lose a current form in order to be reshaped, which is almost like butterfly-like in a way. But I love it in the context of a candle. I think it's really well done. Something kind of, I don't know, it's a weird word, but like creamy to the poem, like and how it feels to hear it and to see it. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was well done. Pam, what did you think?
Did you say my name?
I did.
Okay. Yeah, I really like this. This is a little bit different for Stephen. I liked the gentle tone to this. I like how it's a shape candle, and I have to agree with you, there is a kind of a sensuality to it. I also like there's kind of a spirituality, kind of a look at the idea that we become something by becoming nothing. You know, like the idea of emptying oneself during meditation. So beautifully written and very well done.
I like the way you phrased that, you know, the possibilities in becoming nothing. I like that idea. Thank you, Pam. Feziana, what did you think?
I agree with you both. I like that he made it a concrete poem where you can actually see the candle. I liked the part that says, allow my wax to drip, to meticulously melt, and that it's allowing love to be felt means you might melt. You can kind of lose yourself in that, and you lose your hard shape of the original candle. But then once you've melted, you can be changed into anything. So it opens up your potential. I like what Pam just said there about accepting being nothing is how you get. I can't say it, but Pam said something beautiful about that, how that works with Zen, and I was like, yes, that's the thing. My mind is not grasping it properly anymore, but whatever Pam said, I'm with you.
It was good. Nice. Great comment. I like that. What she said.
What she said. Well, I was going to do mine, but my computer has decided to freeze. So, actually, Babbler, can you just grab one off the list that we haven't done yet, and I will reset my internet. I'll be there in a second.
Alrighty. Give me 1 second to grab from our list here. Nice awkward silence. All right. I just put Timeless Turnstile by Wichita Rick up. Did you want me to go ahead and give it a read?
Yes, please. I'm still having technical issues.
Absolutely. This is Timeless Turnstile, Wichita Rick. Timeless Turnstile. Beginning as one united coming or going, using a single door. Plans playing out, always solved with little doubt. Plenty of passion divided equally. The other familiar face means most issues, a minor chore. Another figure adds more rigor as households grow, extra weight not too great, remaining attached to the commitment still devout. Singles slowly separating, unknowing we stop growing, once common ground become a hidden topic to explore. Day to day we still play, but with an ever-increasing price to pay. Going from a one-way slow lane to a faster double roundabout. Finding a meeting place on middle ground, harder and harder to be found. Passion lost, viewing another with a blink or nod makes them easier to ignore. Knowing this ceaseless hurry is ending our relationship in a flurry, finding time's balance will repair romance, no longer lost under time's shroud. Our feet. End poem. I really liked this piece. It has interesting kind of rhymes and alliteration in it, you know, plans playing out, and then rhymes with doubt. They're kind of internal within the same line. And that's kind of repeated throughout the piece, and it gives this this piece almost a kind of jerky flow. That's really enjoyable. It makes it fun to read because it feels very push and pulley. You know, it feels at times very rushed, and then it slows down, and then it's rushed, and then it slows down, which I think feeds really well into the idea of a turnstile, you know, where it's like those bars that kind of, you know, you have to push and you go, and then you push and you go, and it really is kind of has this kind of odd pacing to it. I think that is captured really well in here. You know, like day to day we still play, but with an ever-increasing price to pay, going from a one-way slow lane to a faster double roundabout. Like, even in the flow, it's like da-da, 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 da-da-da-da. Like, it's, but it works well because it's tied together with the alliteration and the rhyming. So I found this piece very fascinating, very technically interesting, you know. The kind of call to slow down and just enjoy a relationship and not, like, rush into it and rush, you know, through the days. I really enjoyed, you know, like, not to do things so much as a burden and a pushing through, but to take them slowly. I thought it was a wonderful piece. Fabriziana, what did you think?
Well, I just read the AN, and it kind of makes me rethink a couple of things. So it says, recalling how when married with a new kid, a new house, three jobs, we saw this happening and took time each day to reflect with each other, even when it was boring. So that makes me think, when it says another figure adds more rigor as households grow, it's talking about how the baby, you know, made things harder but better at the same time sometimes, and the extra weight not too great, so it was you know, more responsibility, more money, more time consuming, but remaining attached and still devoutly committed. It's about you know, getting through as a family and staying connected to your partner. I really liked the line, finding a meeting place on middle ground, harder and harder to be found, because I think that applies to so many things. Everything is so polarized now that it's like, I don't know, the last few years it feels like politics and just opinions on like everything seem to be like extremes on from both sides, and it's like it's really hard to meet and talk about things because there are such strong feelings and like opposition on so many different subjects that it is harder to find middle ground. And then it's also hard to find that balance of either you're go, 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 like work like crazy, or you're just like dead to the world, need a break. There's not as much being able to just kind of like enjoy things and go in between. And then it's also like, it seems that, you know, it's been pretty like isolated, and then things are opening up and it's like, there's crowds. And I'm like, I want to gradually ease my way into things with small groups, but it's hard to find that middle ground. It's like everything's nothing or everything. So I don't know, that line in particular stuck with me.
Thanks for reading the AN. Yeah, I think that does add color to it. So I think there's a really good point there. And yeah, I feel you on the polarization lately. You know, you either camp A or camp B, and camp A and B don't like each other. You know, it's like the Hatfield and McCoys lately. I think it's just kind of silly. I also find it's mostly on the internet that it's like that. Anyway, great comment. Pam, what did you think?
Well, I really liked what both of you had to say. I like, Babbler, that you touched on the technical aspects of the poem and how it worked really well with the subject, with the idea of the pushing and pulling being the turning of the turnstile. And I really liked how, Faziana, you brought up the AEN and touched on the emotional and you know, a daily living of a struggle of being a couple with a newborn. So great observations there. I really like that he has a combination of inner and end rhyme. I thought that was wonderfully put in there. And I do really like that line, another figure adds more rigor as household grows, extra weight, not too great. Then finding a meeting place on middle ground, harder and harder to be found, passion lost, viewing another with a blink or nod. You know, there's so much, oftentimes it's a struggle to even find a few seconds alone together. And it's something, it's at that point in a relationship when you realize that it really has to be worked at. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that those are the hardest times, you know, when you really have to work at it. And it's hard to find those middle grounds, you know. Excellent observation, Pam. Thank you. What's up next?
It's me. Start with yours. I wrote to the quote, the place to improve the world is first in one's own heart and head and hands, and then work outward from there. Start with yours. Catastrophe, chaos, climate change, and conflict, a cacophony of news clips and harmful headlines. Being well-read paints my rose-colored glasses red, furious and fearing the crumbling of peace remnants. My reach is small, but I can start from within. Improve a molecule of the world. Start with my heart. I will pour love into art. Encourage instead of criticize. Kindness is contagious. Improve a molecule of the world. Start with my head. Reflect on what's said. Be the voice of reason. Make knowledge accessible. Cite reliable sources. Improve a molecule of the world. Start with my hands. Show someone understands. A friendly wave. A door held. Tiny gestures. My reach is small, but I can start from within. End poem.
Great read, Faziana, and I really like this piece. I think it captures the spirit of that quote very well. You know, it starts off with, like, all of the hard things that are going on, which you interestingly just touched upon kind of on the end of the last piece, you know, kind of watching all of the negativity and news and media so much anymore just really focuses on that because they're, you know, selling views, really. But then to go into, you know, my reach is small, but I can start from within. And then to give all of these really wonderful examples of, like, ways that you can be that goodness, you know, ways that you can show that kindness that you see missing in the news and around the world and all of the things that you see, I think is really well done. I think it does such a great job of capturing the spirit of the piece, and then to end also on those same two lines to just really reinforce it, like, yes, my reach is small, but it's not nothing, and it's so much bigger than nothing, and if everybody did this small thing, think how much better everything would be. I think it's a wonderful write. Thank you, Faziana. What do you think, Pam?
I think this is absolutely wonderful. I really like the alliteration, especially with the C sounds, sharp C sounds in the first stanza. And I like the stanza, improve a molecule of the world, start with my heart, I will pour love into art. The idea that you can be a positive force of energy through your poetry and a helping hand to those around you. This makes me think of the song Bright in the Corner Where You're At, or Bright in the Corner Where You Are, which is a I guess it must be a Christian song, because I heard it when I was younger in church. But what I like about that song, while not the whole song may appeal or beneficial to like everybody, I think that one particular line, Bright in the Corner Where You're At, is, and I get that same message from your poem, is the idea that you don't have to be this big grand light that shows for everybody in the world. You can be a light, like where you say, my reach is small, but I can start from within. You can be that light that shines for yourself. You can be that light that shines for people closest to you. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you.
I agree, Pam. I really kind of like to... Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead, Bebler.
I just really like, too, what you're kind of saying there. It's a very, Pam, you know, about being in for those two. Like, you know, have to be like this giant tower, you know, the gesture. I'm small. So, be it. That Pam was.
I have a hard time hearing you, Babbler. Pam, is she breaking up for you, too?
She was, yes.
Okay.
I'll try and figure
that out.
Oh,
but now I hear you. Okay. I'm going to get Pam to read the next one and play with your phone, Babbler. see what's up. This one is called Passion's Promise. It's by Passion Promise. So, Pam, I'll let you take that one away.
All right. Ticking Through Life by Passion's Promise. And it goes like this. Like a clock, the hands got to work. From the mind, life has got to be set. Locked in, we got to be, in order to attend freely in giving to the world's needs. Tick, tick goes the clock in demand, mentally fixated in delving into the hands of the mission ahead. From the heart through the hands, assisting volunteers for the hungry, listening to the stories, holding back tears. Heartache, tick-tock, tick-tock, rhythm of the grandfather and his hands wrinkled, age, his heart weak, a lifetime of stories he holds, some told, some unfold. He still has a tune on the hour, precious the gifts he maintains. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I really enjoyed this piece. And the way it ties in a clockwork to kind of different, you know, stages in life and different mindsets, you know, that we're kind of all, we all have the same hours in a day is kind of what it makes me think of. We all have the same time, but time feels more pressing the older that you get. Like, it seems to go faster, even though it doesn't. You know, it's really more about what you do with it, which I really enjoyed. You know, tick-tock goes the clock in demand, mentally fixated and delving into the hands of the mission ahead. You know, just this really driving kind of clockwork, you know, in the different ways you can help. You know, assisting volunteers for the hungry, listening to stories, you know, just living through kindness and acts of empathy. And then to kind of go to the end, you know, the rhythm of the grandfather and all of the stories that they hold and all of the lessons. And yet, you know, still time remains to learn from those and tap into those if you listen. And I also like that it doesn't really clarify on whether or not the narrator is also the grandfather. You know, like, is it his life later on, or is this the hungry that he's helping and assisting and listening to? I think it gives it a nice bit of ambiguity that I really kind of enjoy. there's, again, like a real tenderness to this piece, you know, about them, how, you know, how what you do in small moments really matters, you know. The small things are the big things. Oh, I enjoyed this writing. I thought it was well done. Abiziana, what did you think?
I especially liked the last stanza. Tick-tock, tick-tock, rhythm of the grandfather works really well because grandfather clocks. And the description of his hands and how both his hands and his heart have become weak, but he's stronger in some ways because he has this lifetime of stories that he holds. And I really love that emphasis on the stories because it's something that I'd really like to capture from elders is their stories. Some are told and some untold, and you know, to have more opportunity for them to tell their stories, for it to be passed on to the next generation. I really felt the connection in that last stanza, and I do think it's cool that the grandfather clock works well with the tick-tock. My own grandfather built a grandfather clock himself, and it's my mom's, like, one of her most treasured possessions is she has this clock that her dad made, and it doesn't really work anymore, but still, it's just there, and it kind of represents, like, his strength, and so for some reason that I have a sense with the grandfather clock that there's this, like, respect for this man, even as he's kind of withering, he has these stories that fill him up, and I just think that's beautiful.
Yeah, I also really love the tie-in and play on grandfather as, you know, the clock. I thought it was a cool kind of take on the use of the word hands as well to incorporate time into it. That was wonderful. So thanks for the observation, Louisiana. Thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
I think this is just absolutely beautiful. I like how she uses the extended metaphor of the clock, and as you mentioned, the use of the hands, meaning the hands of the clock, but also the hands of the person. I like how this is about that passing of time and how we can live life to the fullest by helping other people. And I have to agree with Faziana, one of the best things about listening to somebody who's of an older generation is the stories they tell. So just absolutely a beautiful write and very well done.
Yeah. Agreed. Always the best stories. The older you get, the more you accumulate and the more fascinating and textured things you have to offer. Great observation. Where are we off to now, Faziana?
The last poem from that contest is by Roy Britton. So I'm going to get you to read that, and then we'll do the audios from the third contest, and I think that will wrap us up.
All righty. Is Knowing, Not Admitting It by Roy Britton. Reaching out, touching it, grasping the blue of the sky, listening closely, how now we hear it, the silence of the river flowing by. Drifting through life, her hand in mine, feeling the green of the leaves, watching time move through the pines, tasting the coolness of the breeze. Seeing the sounds, hearing the silence, tasting the colors, touching the essence of life itself. Name the unknown. Naming is not the same. Your mind is blown. End poem. I liked this, you know, just the experiencing everything in a very present way, you know, just almost like re-grasping a childlike wonder, you know, looking at how blue the sky is and trying to listen for it, you know, almost like hearing the sky, you know, and in one sense you could think, oh, well, like the wind, but I almost try and imagine like hearing the color blue, and what that would sound like. And then going through life, her hand in mine, you know, just enjoying life with somebody, and just, again, just living in the moment, you know, feeling the green of the leaves and the trees and tasting the air and just being. I really felt like this poem was really about presence and being present and enjoying life in a moment and with someone. And then that end I thought was really great too. Name the unknown. Naming is not the same when your mind is blown. Putting a name to a feeling when the feeling is too big, you know, to say, oh, I'm really happy, just feels inadequate. It's kind of the vibe I get from that, you know, just it's not enough to sum up in just like one or two words. So I really liked it. I thought it was a very great piece, and it sounds so cheesy coming out of my mouth, but like, I don't know, it was very peaceful and very uplifting and very positive. So I enjoyed it very much. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is wonderful, and you pretty much sound, I thought that was a great comment. You sound like me when I start getting tired by the end of the night, but this was meditative. It had a gentleness to it, and I liked how it's all about getting out there in nature and really, as you said, living in the moment and enjoying and appreciating the gifts around you. I really like tasting the coolness of the breeze and seeing the sounds, seeing the silence, tasting the colors, touching the essence. Touching the essence is beautiful because it feels like, to me, about speaking about more than a physical presence of nature, but the essence, the underlying presence of nature, and so beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. It is very meditative. Yeah, just the awareness of surroundings. Wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. Afiziana, what did you think?
Well, what he's describing here is a lot like synesthesia. Synesthesia, I can't even say it, and I have it, where your senses are mixed up. So, like, you taste colors, and you see sounds, and I get all mixed up like that. So the way that he's describing it, I think he's trying to be, like, not actually describing the condition that I have, but to make it beautiful, like you guys were saying about how it's like fully experiencing things. But because I have synesthesia, for me, I'm like, yeah, that's just life. this is describing experiences. So it's a little different, I think. I have a weird perspective on this one, but I think that he worded it beautifully, and I'm like, this captures something that I don't know how to say. So yay, Roy. Maybe he has my condition. That's cool. Our next poems, I'm hoping we have time for both of the audios that we have. They are from Babbler's other contest, which is about rest. Babbler, do you want to give an intro to that contest?
Sure. So the other contest that I had going was kind of an exploration of the concept of rest, and kind of what it means for different people, because different people have interpretations of what rest is. So I felt like it was a good time because I felt like sleepy winter is kind of waking up, and I'm feeling a bit revamped, but other people maybe not so much. So again, I put some quotes in here to kind of help with inspiration, but mostly I was just interested in hearing, like, what is rest to you? Like, what does that mean? But here are the quotes that I kind of given to help, you know, raise the creative juices. But rest is not idleness. and to lie sometimes on the grass under trees on a summer's day, listening to the murmur of water or watching the clouds float across the sky is by no means a waste of time. That was from John Lubbock in The Use of Life. The next quote was, "My dear, we are all made of water. It's okay to rage. Sometimes it's okay to rest, to recede." That was Sanober Khan from A Thousand Flamingos. The next quote was, "The most valuable thing we can do for the psyche, occasionally, is to let it rest, wander, live in the changing light of room, not try to be or do anything, whatever." That was by Mae Sarton. And the next quote, "You cannot imagine the craving for rest that I feel, a hunger and thirst. For 6 long days since my work was done, my mind has been a whirlpool, swift, unprogressive, and incessant, a torrent of thoughts leading nowhere, spinning round, swift and steady." And that was H.G. Wells from When the Sleeper Wakes. "My head aches, my arms and legs have given up, and my face in the mirror has a grayish cast. The bed across the room calls in its unmistakable lover's croon, 'Come, come to me. Only I can make you truly happy. Oh, how happy I'll make you. Don't resist. Remember how you moan with pleasure the instant we touch.'" That was from Lynn Sharon Schwartz, the fatigue artist. "Just because you take breaks doesn't mean you're broken." That was from Curtis Tyrone Jones. Those were the prompts.
Excellent prompts. And I'm laughing at myself because I thought that we are going to be ending in 5 minutes because I'm mixed up about what day it is. And I was thinking it was on the hour, but it's on the half hour for this show. So we actually have lots of time, and we're going to get time to do I think all the poems, but I was just like, oh, no, I don't know if we're going to have time for two, and then you're probably like, what?
Well, it was funny because just before you said something, Afasiana, I was just about to message you and ask you if you were all right, because I was like, is she having a seizure or something?
I have had a really bad brain week, to be honest with you. I've been having some trouble focusing and standing. So this is, no, good point. No, we we have time, so I just don't know what
awesome.
Date is.
So, I'm like some 15-minute poems, huh?
It has been known to happen when it's big collaborations. So our audio, our first audio is by Lynn Gauthier, and it's called Smallest Rituals.
Smallest Rituals. What better way to cherish your soul? Take time out. Stop and offer that most precious commodity. To light a candle, burn some incense, take a couple of deep breaths. Relax till harmony sets in. Honor that sacredness within that we so carefully protect. Pause and stretch. Celebrate and rejoice. Grateful for sunshine, clouds, or both. Thankful for this precious life and all its challenges and bounty.
I really enjoyed that SoundCloud. Thank you so much, Lynn, for giving us the SoundCloud. It's so nice to hear the poetry in your voice, especially this piece. It felt almost like a meditation. It reminded me of when I used to do yoga, you know, and you do your yoga session, and at the end they'd have you lay down and kind of stretch everything out, focus on your breathing, and then they'd talk kind of in the same pacing, and it was so soothing. It was like a built-in meditation after yoga. It made it hard for me to not fall asleep just because I was so relaxed at the end. And it kind of reminded me of that. I love, too, the point of it, you know. The rest is to take time out. Even small moments, you know, lighting a candle and burning some incense and just breathing for a moment. I also really loved the idea that, you know, thankfulness, you know, an appreciation for things can be such small things. You know, grateful for sunshine, clouds, or both. You know, to enjoy even the bad weather and to be appreciative for it. You know, you can find the positives in just about anything. You know, if you look, if you're looking for something good about something, chances are you will find it. And that's what that line in particular makes me think. But, you know, just the small moments of rest, just the small meditations. I think this is beautifully done, and especially accompanied by your voice. You know, it's so soothing. It almost is its own guided meditation. So I loved it. I thought it was very well done. Afisiana, what did you think?
I loved it too, and I'm really happy that she gave us that SoundCloud. She has such a beautiful voice all the time, but this time in particular, it had that gentleness to it. Like, she could do ASMR, which I'm not good at describing, but it's like that calming kind of low talking that people listen to fall asleep. It's just, she has that meditative pace to the way that she talks. She sounded so gentle, and it's just, yeah, I could see her talking during yoga or a massage or something like that, and just like melting away all of your stress. She makes a good setting here. Like, she sets the tone where there's the candle and the smell of the incense, and you're honoring the sacredness within. I think this is beautiful. I really like the line that you pointed out, Babbler, about the sunshine, clouds, or both. Personally, I'm strange, and I like the clouds. I find the sun a little bit too hard on my migraines, really. But I'm in, like, a sunny valley where we're, like, we joke that we pay the sunshine tax because it's more expensive to live here than in the places where we have more rain. I actually, like, really appreciate the clouds. But also, I'm grateful for the sunshine helping things grow. And I think having that gratefulness for one or the other or both, I like that she says both, is part of being, like, well-rounded and at peace. You have to recognize that not everything is going to be exactly the way that you want, and take those deep breaths. And she has this beautiful calmness in her poem and in her audio that I think works really well. And it looks like, I didn't watch the video, but oh, no, it's just a picture. the audio has the picture of the candle as well. So it just adds that extra layer of peacefulness. Well done, Lynn.
Yeah, it's just beautifully soothing. And I agree with you. I'm a cloud person. I like clouds, especially, like, dark, heavy clouds. Not when it's raining, but, like, that impending rain is, like, some of my favorite weather. Anyway, I'd share that. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I'm with both of you. Clouds all the way. You know, I think we could become Team Cloud. And, this is just absolutely beautiful. And her voice, her read of this fits so well with the subject of the rite. Like, she created that peaceful and meditative tone. And I really like this all the way through, but I like how it's, you know, the main message is the importance of taking time to take care of yourself, even with those little moments, those little rituals. I particularly like the lines, honor that sacredness within, and where it says, relax till harmony sets in. I guess I should have said those both a different opposite, but those lines in particular, to me, it's not, you know, just relax until you feel a little bit calmer, but relax until you realize that, you know, you have harmony within you, that you have sacredness within you. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, I agree that just the small moments. I think it's just a very well done piece. Thank you so much for your comments. Where are we going now?
Now we have one by Weaver of Dreams, and I have an audio for that one as well. It's called Restless.
It's said that rest is not idleness. Try telling that to my insomniac's brain. I'm not wired to lie down in silence, close my eyes and be rocked to sleep wrapped in the arms of Morpheus. I have found through years of wakefulness the only way I can rest that might slow down those rapidly firing synapses a little bit is to engage my mind so that sleep catches me unaware. Then I can't fight it. I fear falling asleep. It's illogical, I know, but it's like a small death each time I do. Waking up feels like I've had an electric shock. There is no slow stretch to start my day. My body jerks and I feel every muscle interlock. It's not all gloom and doom, I'm pleased to say. Acceptance was not easy, but when I realise that things would not change, that a 22-hour day is my normality, I adapted, filled that time, with lots of laughter, crafting, and yes, poetry.
Oh, I enjoyed this. It was so soft, which I found so unexpected with the image. I really appreciate the SoundCloud again. It gave it such a beautiful tone, you know. And yeah, I've struggled with insomnia. I know what that's like. To just be absolutely, completely wide awake at like 4 or 5 a.m. and you want to be asleep, but you can't. And you just kind of learn how to make do and make adapt. And more than that, like embrace it, you know. Sometimes I really enjoy it because I get so much done because I'm awake for so long. But I really, the phrasing in here sometimes was just beautifully done, you know, and the concept of fearing falling asleep, you know, it's like a small death each time I do. It's just kind of like, wow, you know, I haven't experienced that. I've always enjoyed falling asleep, but just the idea of being horrified of it, you know, and then rest wouldn't be particularly restful for you. You know, it would just be sleep. So I enjoy that they end it, too, on that positive note. You know, they're not all gloom and doom. They've kind of learned how to fill a 22-hour day with positive things, laughter and crafting and poetry, and just learn to expand their day to fill that. You know, that rest means something different for them. So I liked this piece a lot. And his different take on rest and what that means and looks like for different people. So thank you so much, Weaver of Dreams. I really enjoyed this piece. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked this too. I liked how she brings us into her life, her world, and her state of mind, and how, you know, at first, you know, the idea that insomnia was something to be fought against, you know, but I like how she mentions in the end stanza that it's not all gloom and doom. There is, you know, this idea of using that time. If you're going to have those longer days, use that time, as she says. She fills it with lots of laughter, crafting, and yes, poetry. Wonderful lines all the way through and very well done.
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, to say, hey, you know, just because you can't sleep doesn't mean it has to be terrible. Excellent observations, Pam. Feziana, what were your thoughts?
I really liked this. I like the line wrapped in the arms of Morpheus. I like the part where it's talking about to engage my mind so that sleep catches me unaware, then I can't fight it. I totally relate to that. So it's not so bad anymore, but for a while when I was really sick, falling asleep always felt like spinning. I don't know, it was a dizzy kind of feeling right before I fell asleep. So as soon as I felt that, I would panic and then, because I thought something bad was happening, probably because my heart was slowing down too much or something, I don't know. So I understand that kind of fear. I don't fear it until right at that moment, and then I spin and it's like, oh, jolt awake. So I have to distract myself. If I just lay there, then I either overthink everything or something, like it doesn't work. So you have to be doing something. I have to watch something or read something or do something. I can't just lay there hoping to fall asleep. I just have to like fall asleep. So I really liked that she said that, because I've never actually had someone say it like that, where you have to let it catch you unaware. I think that that's a smart way of putting it. She's captured something I don't know how to express. So, yay! I love when people do that. I'm like, why did I not say that? The electric shock of waking up, I totally get that. The idea at the end of filling your days with other ways that help you relax, like both of you have said, it's really good because relaxing isn't just sleep. Relaxing is anything that recharges you. And, you know, some things are draining and some things fill you up. And if the crafting and poetry fills you up, then that is your rest. I've actually kind of had this talk with people before, because I'm part-time because I'm disabled and my brain can't handle too much for my actual paid job. And then I spend a whole bunch of time like on a poetry website doing things and doing these shows and stuff. And they're like, well, if you didn't do that, would you have more energy? I'm like, no, that's the thing that refills me. So even when something seems like for some people it would be work to have to write, for others it is their rest. It helps them recharge. So recognizing what things recharge you and what things drain you is, I think, important to rest, and I like that Weaver of Dreams has recognized the things that do the rest.
Yeah, agreed. I like that you say that poetry recharges you, and I mean, Weaver of Dreams also mentions it in their piece, because, yeah, for me it's more of an outlet. You know, it's not so much something that's draining so much as it's something that I want to do. I agree with you on that. Pam, what did you think?
Didn't you already comment?
Yes, that was what I was going to say. Didn't I already comment?
You did. It's one of those things where, like, I realize it right after I say it. I'm like, well, awkward. Don't mind me, just being busy. Thank you. Where are we going now?
I'm going to read one by Stephen T. Wellman, who we did hear from earlier in the show, but that was to a different contest. So this is to the rest one, and it's called Woodlands. Whispering woods weep, the secrets they keep in timely seasons unsung. Orchestrated winds play for time. Gray, bare branches dance. Cool spring breezes blow. A red robin tweets, a cherished chirp, celebrating new life. Green hues return, cover a grimmest ground. Winter's wrath wrestles with warmth. Hope is walking these woodlands, wilderness alive and tame. I am charged once again. End poem.
Great read. I love this piece, because I think this kind of really reflects kind of what I've been feeling lately. And I've noticed as I go through like old notebooks and binders and poems of mine that it tends to be the case that when spring kind of kicks in the gear, so do I. Spring and the hints of things that are coming alive. And I feel more alive. I feel more awake.
you know, I struggle with depression. It's a thing that happens, and for me it's at least somewhat seasonal. I tend to feel kind of down and sluggish in the winter, and I have a hard time doing really basic things like just caring for myself. And yet always it seems that right around this time of year, it kind of recedes, that as the world is kind of warming up and waking up, so am I. And so I think this kind of mimics that. And I love all of the ties into nature here that Stephen has pulled in. You know, whispering woods weep. Like, what a wonderful alliteration to start with. You know, to be looking into the forest and kind of peeking at the seasons and the end of winter. The gray bare branches dance. Cool spring breezes blow. A red robin tweets, you know, and a robin being the first sign of spring. And just, you know, as things turn green again and as things flourish again, to also come alive. I really appreciate that's so much of what I feel about spring. Although fall is my favorite, I do really enjoy spring as well. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was lovely. Afusiana, what did you think?
I loved it. I do have a weakness for alliteration, and there's some excellent alliteration here. I also love the word whispering, which people make fun of me because I'm a librarian, and it's funny because I do not whisper at the library at all. I'm loud. But whispering is just something about that word. It has wisp. it feels magical to me. And orchestrated winds makes me think of how beautiful the sounds can be of the wind and going through the trees, going through wind chimes. Sometimes the way that, like, rock formations are, it creates this, like, tunnel of wind. It makes such beautiful sounds. And you can see why people made instruments that use winds, like the flutes and things like that, because of the way that the wind naturally just sounds so cool. I like that he engages your senses. There's the sounds, there's the visual of the branches dancing, and the way that the breeze affects you, like in the way that it feels, the way that it sounds, the way that it looks. I think one of my favorite lines was a cherished chirp. The fact that that chirp is cherished and that the robin is tweeting about it makes me think it's the little baby bird, a cherished chirp. That baby bird is just so loved immediately. That noise means that the bird has come out of its egg. And then celebrating new life. So those little baby birds coming to life. I'm so excited for that to be happening soon, where I get to watch the chicks get born. because there's something so special about them, like, I can't think of the word, pecking their way through the egg. I'm making hand gestures, you can't see. that cherished chirp. I love that he used the word cherished. That it covers the grimmest ground. He uses such wonderful adjectives here. And then again with the alliteration, winter's wrath wrestles with warmth. There's sounds here, and it's not just that the first letter is W. He has a lot of TH going on later on in the words that works really well. And the idea of being charged again, partly because of the change in seasons, but I think also just being outside in any season, witnessing both the bare branches or the full branches, having that connection with nature and feeling the cycle of the seasons is invigorating, no matter what season it is. I like the transitions of the seasons. That's partly why I like living in Canada where I do, because you get to fully experience all seasons. Like some places it's always hot, it's always cold. Each season is pretty distinct for me, and I like that transition because I think if anyone lasted too long, I would get bored with it. I like having that transition, and it's like a renewal each time the season changes, no matter which change. So thank you, Stephen. This was a beautiful poem, and I really think I have to go out into nature and read poems more because so many of them are about nature, and I'm like, this should be appreciated outside.
This does just have such a nice tie into nature. I loved all of your comments, Louisiana. The walking around in it and then just absorbing it. Wonderfully said. Pam, what did you think?
Well, I thought this was a beautiful brevity, and I have to agree, just lovely use of alliteration, imagery, and sound. I did particularly like that second stanza. But I like how the overall message of this poem is about recharging your batteries, your batteries inside yourself, by connecting to, by taking time to connect to and to listen to and look around at nature. So beautifully written and very well done.
The recharge, the spring recharge. I agree. Beautiful. Thank you, Pam. What's up next, Ephesiana?
We have Earth's Commotion by Passion's Promise. Babbler, can you read that one, please?
Yep. So this is Earth's Commotion by Passion's Promise. Flat on the back, wee hours of the morning, insomnia. I watch as the moonlight kisses the shades and duck beyond the mountaintops. Stars dripping from the skies, leaving the mirror of self, longing to catch them in open palm. With bloodshot eyes I seek dreaming, butterflies and roses dancing freely amongst the winds, sweet tango. Playfully, I sway catching fireflies beneath the moon's blushing cheeks. Counting stars, but to no avail, I am left, wide-eyed, at peace, restful. Mind is running in slow motion, but dreams are running full force, exciting. In a moment's blink, I am thinking of you, my knight, on a wild horse, bareback. Oh, how I love these moments where I envision us, free from Earth's commotion, even as blood ink drips from the eyes of lack of. I am at peace in sweet, wide-eyed dreaming of intimate moments shared with you. End poem. I really enjoyed this, the dreaming while unable to sleep. I love that I can't really tell exactly whether or not the narrator is asleep, to start with just flat on the back in the wee hours of morning, just laying there awake, but not awake. I just really enjoyed viewing all of this imagery, the cascade of stars dripping from the sky. Just what that would look like, just a sky full of falling stars, to seek dreaming while envisioning butterflies and roses dancing and swaying. And there's something really ethereal and light and almost playful about the different things that are envisioned in this piece, counting stars, but to no avail, and yet peaceful, restful, mind running in slow motion. So it's almost like an insomniac's night dream where you're not actually awake, but you're still dreaming and thinking in your mind, going through all of these scenarios to envision, the lover on horseback being a knight and just really enjoying and playing with those moments. I really liked. I thought this was a really great piece. There was so much imagery going on and so much calm but twisting. It felt almost like petals in a flurry of wind kind of feel. I thought it was a beautiful piece and a lovely write. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is beautiful. I really enjoyed the imagery in this, and I really enjoy and appreciate how she brings us into the quietness of that, the early morning hours when it's just barely morning and still could be considered nighttime. So it's kind of like that veil between the two. And I like how she says at the end, oh, how I love these moments where I envision us. Such a kind of a romantic phrasing within those lines. And I also like butterflies and roses dancing frilly amongst the wind's sweet tangle. Playfully I sway, catching fireflies. There's kind of a sweet innocence within those lines that I really enjoy. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, those lines in particular are very soft and romantic. I agree, Pam. Wonderful comment. Now, what did you think of Asiana?
I like what you said. It is soft and romantic. I like the moonlight kissing the shades. That's such a gentle way of saying the way that the light is going. My favorite part was a cascade of stars dripping from the skies, leaving the mirror of self. I kind of think of that as like when you're focusing on like the beauty of the world and the stars and all of that, then you're not thinking too much about your own life and your own problems and all of that. You're leaving the mirror of yourself aside and you're just focusing on the beauty that you are seeing. And it ends up being that way with like the, it's like daydreams. Where you end up getting so lost in your imagination, though, that you're not totally sure if you are dreaming. I like what you said, Babbler, like, do we know if they've fallen asleep? Maybe they are just thinking about it. Maybe they actually have started to drift off. That imagination and rest is there. I liked the contrast of the mind running in slow motion, but the dreams are running full force, exciting. And, you know, when you have that kind of, like, wild thought, but also at the same time you're having trouble processing it, that is that sleepy kind of daze where sometimes I'll think something and I'll be like, oh, that's a really good idea. I should. And then I'm like, wait, what was I just thinking? And I didn't like finish the thought. I've lost it. that half asleep kind of feeling. That's what I envision when I hear this. But there's such beautiful images at the same time, the dripping stars, but that kind of confused feeling too. Even as blood ink drips from eyes of lack of. I like the wording of that. This is beautiful.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous. And I have also experienced that. What the heck was I just thinking? I'm going to experience like mid-conversation. I'll be halfway through explaining an idea. And my idea is gone. And I'm like, I no longer know what I was talking about, so let's move on. You feel like this is boring. But, yeah, this is a beautiful piece, but, yeah, I just wanted to relate to what you're talking about.
Sometimes it just, like, hits the wall, you know?
Yeah, I do know. Wonderful comment, Ephesiana. I'm feeling spacey now, and I can't remember if I asked for your opinion or not.
I believe so. Yes. Yes.
I thought so.
It's no offense to you, Pam. She's just sleeping through it all. We are talking about dreams, after all. But speaking of Pam, would you like to read the poem by Daniel Deschino?
I would be happy to. The Weight to the World, a Blanket in Disguise by Daniel Deschino. And it goes like this. Oh, innocent youth, so free from clockwork demons, rejoice in the freedom of rest when fatigued and nourishment when hungry. when for the world in which you see onwards does not tick with internal time. Years bring weight to muscle and bone as tired body calls with pain for help. Counterbalance to the aging mind. I forever recycling the added hours, growing in chaos as storm over tropical waters. If only to think back and re-enter the childhood mind, the place of comfort of the small space that surrounds the past strange abstraction and a future, the future so mythically far away. While now I sit the same eyes with which I was born, oh, how so much has passed through their sight, all of which claws violently from within, screams when the quiet times allow. A world fully understood, I hear suffering of those who bathe in sunlight, and they sweat their blood as I try to sleep. The past, like a haunted gravesite, each tombstone a daily memory, the future an oncoming train in a tunnel, and an eye running away on the track. And run I do, escaping through the side tunnel. Only I know is there, and I hide and stay hidden in the dark places no memory can find until the world forgets I exist, and I forget there is a world, and body and mind relax and rest until the world I've forgotten comes back in jest and poem.
Wonderful read, Pam. And a really interesting piece from Daniel Deschino. I feel like, you know, this piece to me speaks of, like, trauma and the effects of trauma later and ways to cope with it. You know, I think about anxiety in places that my mind goes that are, like, dark and make it difficult to focus and make it difficult to relax because you're just always in emergency mode. You know, and trying to find that mindset where once upon a time none of that seemed to have happened and you didn't seem to care, and trying to forget that. I was particularly struck by the lines, you know, until the world forgets I exist and I forget there is a world. It sounds almost like finding rest in dissociation, you know, like just escaping from everything and just kind of hiding and pretending that, you know, nothing really matters and nothing's really real. And that could be me over reading into that based on my own experience, but, like, you know, just trying to escape for a moment to just let your mind be quiet for a second so that you can get some rest. Is kind of what I get from this, you know. And it's really just punctuated by that opening, too, you know, pining for an easier time. Oh, innocent youth, so free from clockwork demons. Rejoice in the freedom of rest when fatigued and nourishment when hungry. Like, just, you know, the fact that that doesn't exist anymore, you know, that that used to be a thing, but it's not anymore. You know, so rough. The thinking back on me, well, I used to sleep, you know, really easily, quote unquote, like a baby, ironically, as the saying goes. You can feel like the pain in it and the restlessness and like this cyclical escape. So I enjoyed it, but it was a bit dark. But I thought it was really well done. Faziana, what did you think?
I really liked it. The line that has me kind of puzzled and wanting to read more into it is forever recycling the adding hours, recycling them. That's interesting to me. The part that really haunts me and I think is the darkness that you're to is the all of which claws violently from within, screams when the quiet times allow. And I do think that this speaks to trauma. And you know, that's one of the reasons why I need to keep busy and distract myself and able to be able to fall asleep, just like Weaver of Dreams was saying, because when you just have that quiet time of, like, laying there, that's when all of the scary stuff comes back to you. That's when you are lost in those dark thoughts sometimes, in those quiet moments. So it's hard to rest. And I feel like Daniel's playing on that here, because now how much has passed through their sight, so much he has seen that haunts him in these quiet moments. I was also really touched by that part that you were pointing out, Babbler, until the world forgets I exist and I forget there is a world. That does speak to me of like depression and disassociation, like you said, and just trying to like close off and be separate from everything that's going on in order to be able to relax and to feel like there's no expectations on you. Sometimes you wish nobody knew that you were there so you could just fully rest and not feel guilty about not being out doing things. It also, for some reason, reminded me of in The Lord of the Rings, when it's talking about Gollum, and when he first got the ring, and it was like he fell out of time, and I can't remember the way that it was worded, but there's this part about how, like, everything forgot about him, and he forgot about the world, and it was just all that was him in the ring, and for some reason, that part just brought that up to me. I will digress. I will stop rambling, because we are actually officially out of time. I do want to give Pam a chance to comment, but we're not on the air anymore. This is just going to be in the recording. Pam, would you like to comment on?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Another great write by Daniel Descino. I like that he went darker with this one, and I have to agree with you, Anafasiana. There is this sense of needing to heal from trauma and needing to get away. This whole idea of just having to shut down and heal the mind, heal the body. And I like how it shows the difference between how a child views the world and how an adult views the world and the pains that come to us physically and emotionally from adulthood. And, you know, just a brilliant write all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. It looks like we made it through most things. There's one poem that will be carried over by Lawrence 67. Thank you so much, Pam, for calling and being with us. Thank you, Babbler, for being awesome and making such thought-provoking contests that got us some really great writes. Thank you, Fill My Eyes, for giving us the time on Blog Talk Radio to do this show in your group. And thank you to everybody who wrote and contributed to the shows and made SoundClouds, and to Rick and Robbie for hanging out on the board and reading with us. It's so great to be a part of this community. So I will talk to you all very soon on allpoetry.com. And thank you. Good night.